This is the beginning of chapter 29 entitled Explanation of Devotional Service by Lord Kapila. The first chapter that deals with Kapila Muni's teaching was 25. And in chapter 25, it was entitled The Glories of Devotional Service. So chapter 25 and chapter 29 deal with devotional service. Here in this chapter there'll be an explanation by Lord Kapila on how to differentiate between one type of devotional service and another, and then how to execute that devotional service. At that point, when he completes that, which is towards the end of this chapter, his teachings of Sankhya Yoga will cease. And then he will further answer other questions that his mother Devahuti will now ask him. But this devotional service, again, it is the heart, it is the power of not only Sankhya Yoga, which is a mixture of Jnana, Astanga Yoga, and Bhakti, Jnana Yoga, Astanga Yoga, and Bhakti, but it is also that which gives potency to all spiritual paths. Without Bhakti, which evokes Krishna's mercy, nothing has. One is only dealing with the material energy practically, unless there is some bhakti. Everything is mechanistically working without bhakti. But bhakti allows for the possibility of Krishna's mercy, his kindness. So in the after explaining the glories of bhakti in chapter 25, Kapila Muni then in 26 and 27 explained the jnana part, the Lord's relationship with his material energy, how it is all resting upon him, how the material energy is created by him, and ultimately, he doesn't describe it here, but it is dissolved by him, annihilated by him. He uses different mediums for that, but he is the one upon whom everything is resting, everything. And yet, he is completely aloof from everything of the material world. Just think of what each and every one of us consider powerful and great in this world. Is it some scientist's intelligence? Is it some person's physical strength? Is it the universal structure? Is it the complexities of the body or the brain or the process of digestion? Is it the way a plant grows, the way a tiger roars? These just spring from a tiny spark of Krishna's splendor. And he himself doesn't even have to, practically speaking, consider making any of these things happen, including the entire universe and its manifestation. He begins the universal manifestation with his plenary part, Karanadakshay Vishnu, who is an expansion of Shankarshan, who is an expansion of Mahashankarshan, who is an expansion of Baladev, who is his expansion. How powerful he is. This is God. And therefore Prabhupada would become irate, angry, when someone would dare to claim that they were God. A tiny, insignificant individual saying, "I am God." Well, where is this incredible potency? You can produce some bhasma or some gold or something or another. But can you show a universal form? Can you make the sun and the stars move? No, we are tiny. So therefore our claim to be God is ludicrous. It is ridiculous. It is the claim of a crazy person. So although we can easily, every sane person can see clearly that anyone claiming to be God is crazy or foolish or completely bewildered, but yet we all act due to the functioning of false ego as if we were the supreme, the center of everything, and that is also a kind of illusion and craziness. So to show Krishna's potency and how that the soul, how he becomes entangled in the material world and the very nature of the material world, Kapila Muni speaks chapters 26, 27, and in 28 he describes not Jnana Yoga, but Astanga Yoga, the process of separating, the soul separating himself, a yogic process by which the soul can separate himself from the material energy. Because the soul, mama angsa teja sambhava, whoops, wrong verse, mamai vangso jivaloke jiva bhuta sanatana. We are Krishna's part and parcel. We are tiny, insignificant, tiny, fragmental portions of Krishna. So now, after hearing these talks by Kapila Muni that are describing Sankhya Yoga, Devahuti Mataji wants to again go back to the original topic that he brought up, which is the power of bhakti, which is the power of Sankhya Yoga, which is the bhakti. And I find the right at the end, which we won't get to for a few weeks perhaps, but we'll see how Devahuti applies all this. Very interesting. In the final chapter, it speaks about her application and what actually gives her liberation from this material world. So after hearing all this, she wants to hear about bhakti and other topics as well. She wants to hear about bhakti, how to prosecute bhakti. And Kapila Muni is going to explain some very interesting points, not very many. Srila Rupa Goswami has explained the prosecution of bhakti in great detail. But here, Kapila Muni is going to explain it's quite simply, but in more detail than he's explained in chapter 25. In chapter 25, he explained its true essence, which is associating with sadhus, hearing and chanting about Krishna, that which is within the sadhu's heart, his devotion is transferred to a receptive soul who hears about Krishna. And then the goal of that, which is really the essence, is attachment. We have to break our attachment to the material world and increase our attachment to Krishna. Why should we break our attachment to the material world? Does anyone have any idea why?
Source of all suffering.
Yes, how is it? What is the source of all suffering?
Being in the material world.
No, yes, no. Attachment, not the material world isn't of itself the source of suffering. It is that tendency that conditioned souls have to think themselves the lord of matter and to try to exploit the material energy as if they were the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the cause of suffering. For someone who does not possess a false ego, and we've heard this recently, then his being in the material world is not a source of suffering. He's in Krishna's kingdom. He's living only in the mercy of Krishna. He perceives Krishna in everything and everywhere. He perceives nothing but Krishna. He uses everything in Krishna's service. But he's devoid of ahankar. No ahankara vamudatma. No kartaham iti manyate. No thinking himself the doer, the enjoyer. And therefore no sadasad joni janmasu. No suffering, birth and death and birth and death. There's only spiritual results from his activities. So on one hand, viraktiya, vairagya, detachment, renunciation. On the other hand, attachment to Krishna. So Devahuti's question is actually how to make one's attachment to Krishna blossom. How to process, what about the process that makes our devotional service grow and blossom? And her other questions will be how to develop detachment. Very difficult for a soul who has been in the material world, practically speaking, forever, anadi bahumukh, to become detached. He's so entangled, he has a mountain of entanglement and attachment sitting upon his head. So how to perform devotional service in such a way that one actually develops attachment to Krishna? So Devahuti says, my dear Lord, who is she speaking to and referring to as her dear Lord? Who? Her son, Kapila Muni. You have already very scientifically described the symptoms of the total material nature and the characteristics of the spirit, of the soul, according to the Sankhya system, that's Prakriti Purusha, of philosophy. According to Sankhya, you've described that. Now I shall request you to explain the path of devotional service, which is the ultimate end of all philosophical systems. Devahuti continued, my dear Lord, please also describe in detail, both for me and people in general. Now this is, so the bhakti yoga in one sense is the end of the Sankhya. But in another sense, as I just described, the question that she's going to ask now is an adjunct in addition to the Sankhya, in the sense that it assists one in vairagya, or detachment, virakti. So please describe in detail, both for me and the people in general, the continual process of birth and death. Oh, who wants to hear about birth and death? Raise your hand if you want to hear about birth and death. Okay. Okay, yes. Why is it good for us to hear about it? It's not tasteful, actually. There's no rush in hearing about birth and death. It's just frightening. It's miserable. And you hear about the miseries of others, how others suffer. But there is a good thing within that as well. Her question shows what that is. For by hearing of such calamities, birth and death is a calamity. Why is birth a calamity? Yes. Then how come everyone celebrates when someone is born? Everyone's so happy and has a festival. Are they angry at that soul or something? That they want, oh, I'm so happy that you're going to suffer in this life? Because? They don't know. Because, yes. That's, because what? Ignorance. Yeah. Huh? He's joining the club. Yeah. The suffering club. And Sukadev Goswami, when he took birth, he wouldn't even come out. They wouldn't even let him celebrate. He wouldn't even let them celebrate his birth. He stayed in his mother's womb for 16 years or so. Why? You know why? You know? Why? And look who his father was. He still was afraid of getting entangled in Maya. And we'll hear about this later. Because if one becomes entangled in these things, it's so hard to get out. So difficult to get out. Because there's so much entanglement. So much entanglement. For by hearing about such calamities, we may become detached from the activities of this material world. Please also describe eternal time, which is a representation of your form. Time is a potency of the Lord, Kalosmin, Krishna's own potency, energy of the Paramatma, under which everything in this material world is working. Nothing, no one in the material world can escape the time factor. It is pushing continuously ever forward. Even though we may long for the past or even be satisfied with the present, time will push forward to the future. And this time, which is eternal, it's continuous, it has no end, is a representation of your form by whose influence people in general engage in the performance of pious activities. So the last question was, continual process of birth and death for one who is engaged in fruitive activities, in pious activities, in auspicious activities. And the result of that, which is also under the time factor, it's not that the birth and death and everything in between is not under the time factor, it is definitely under the time factor. But she's also asking about, in general, what is the effect of time? And also a very interesting question. What is the effect of time on someone who doesn't engage in impious activities like the question in text 3, but on the other hand, of one who engages in pious activities according to Shastra? He's not just selfish, disobedient to the Shastras, to the scriptures, to the laws of the Lord. But he follows them properly. He follows paths. How does time treat such a person? Very interesting. So let's read some of the purports to 3 and 4. Again, in 3, she's asked about how to perform bhakti, and then about time. For one who's an average person engaged in fruitive activities, and then now about time, how does it affect someone engaged in pious activities? Very interesting. The pious activities one doesn't develop, it does actually develop detachment also, but in a different mood, not exactly motivated by fear as intensely as the fruitive person. But the result is ultimately the same. Prabhupada's purport to 3. In this verse, the word samsriti is very important. Sreya Sriti means the prosperous path of advancement towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Samsriti means, like samsara, means the continued journey on the path of birth and death. In other words, inauspicious path, inauspicious activity. Birth and death towards the darkest region of material existence. People who have no knowledge of this material world, God, and their actual intimate relationship with Him are actually going to the darkest region of material existence in the name of progress, in the material advancement of civilization. In other words, people are trying to advance materially, and the result... And why do people try to advance materially? Why? They want to become happy. Why do people have their family and celebrate their child's birth? Because they think that the child has come into this world to make me materially happy, to bring joy to my family life, to take care of me when I'm old. So who is the center of that? That question always should be asked. Who is the center? You're celebrating the child's birth, but who are you really thinking about as the center of everything? Huh? Yeah. Just thinking me, it's just selfishness. I'm celebrating you because you're going to give me pleasure. So there's not true deep love and affection in that. Or not of the deepest kind anyway. Of the true kind, of the eternal kind. So, to enter. So that's what progress in material advancement of civilization. Everything is just simply selfish, really. Meant for sense enjoyment. To enter the darkest region of material existence means to enter into a species of life other than a human species. Very dangerous, because one enters and one does not know when one is going to come out and have an opportunity again. Animal life, the consciousness is so covered, has no opportunity. Ignorant men do not know that after this life, they are completely under the grip of material nature and will be offered a life which may not be very congenial. What does congenial mean here? Huh? Yes, or pleasant. Congenial to one's happiness. Not very pleasant in the next life. One becomes a rat or a snake or a cockroach or a dog. Oh, or a flea on the dog. And you're just, and just what a relationship. The flea bites the dog and gives the dog pain, and the dog just tries to kill him immediately. What an existence. Or a flea on a monkey, a lice. Oh, what existence. Being always bitten, and you have to wear a fur coat in the hot summer. And to get relief, what do the dogs in Vrindavan do to get relief from the fur coat in the hot summer? What do? They go into the sewer water. Does that sound pleasant? No, it's just thinking about it. Just imagine putting you in the sewer water. You're suffering so much. Just imagine how much suffering that there is. That is relief. Oh, I don't want to be a dog again. How a living entity gets different kinds of bodies will be explained in the next chapter. Anyone want to be a dog in their next life? An American dog, oh, great enjoyment. I pray that your wish does not come true. This continual change of bodies in birth and death is called samsara. Devahuti requests her glorious son, Kapila Muni, to explain about this continued journey, to impress upon the conditioned souls that they are undergoing a path of degradation by not understanding the path of bhakti yoga, devotional service. It is degradation for the soul. Text 4, we'll just read the beginning. However ignorant one may be regarding the path of good fortune and the path down to the darkest region of ignorance, everyone is aware of the influence of eternal time, which devours all the effects of our material activities. We work so hard to accumulate something in the material world. And whatever it is, if our kingdom becomes huge or it becomes very small, it will be devoured by time. And that Kalarupa that Krishna exhibits to Arjuna, what is it? What does it look like as it devours Bhishma, Drona, and all the warriors and all the sides? What is it? It's like a huge mouth, and everyone is being crushed within the teeth of that mouth of time. Not a very pleasant thought, but that's what's happening. Time devours everyone. This is that part of the chapter will start. It's going to be all in that mood, you know, that really heavy, oh, don't go there. It's suffering. The body is born at a certain time, and immediately the influence of time acts upon it. From the date of the birth of the body, the influence of death is also acting. The advancement of age entails the influence of time on the body. If a man is 30 or 50 years old, then the influence of time has already devoured 30 or 50 years of the duration of your life. So how many, you are 25? 24. And how many days? Too many. When is your birthday? Okay, December is coming, so soon you'll be 25. Yes? Is it a nice thought to think that you are 25 years closer to your death than when you were born? Is that a, oh, I'm 25, how nice. And next year I'll be 26. I'm that much closer to my death. It's a frightening thought. Actually, it's extremely frightening. That every day means a day closer to one's leaving this body. Devoured, time has already devoured 30 or 50 years of the duration of life. And Prabhupada on a morning walk, I heard him once say that he was watching the people exercising and playing this game and that game. And he said, they are trying to figure out ways to waste their time. So much of their life is spent trying to figure out means to effectively waste their time. Get some computer game and just use one's time in that way. And Prabhupada explained that we are trying on it. Just trying to get them to do exactly the opposite, to use their time properly, to develop their Krishna consciousness responsibly. So much of the preaching of Krishna consciousness movement is simply on that point. You're a human being, use your life responsibly, not like an animal, wasting your life just eating, sleeping, mating, defending. This is the basic preaching. So everyone is conscious of the last stage of life, when he will meet the cruel hands of death. But some consider their age and circumstances, concern themselves with the influence of time, and thus engage in pious activities. This will be another kind of person. So that in the future they will not be put into a low family or an animal species. So time's dual effects will be discussed. But ultimately it has only one effect. And the end of Devahuti's question, my dear Lord, you are just like the sun. For you illuminate the darkness of the conditional life of the living entities. Because their eyes of knowledge are not opened, they are sleeping eternally in that darkness without your shelter. And therefore they are falsely engaged by the actions and reactions of their material activities. And they appeared to be very fatigued, very tired by their repeated attempts and failures to become satisfied and enjoy this material world. They become tired by that, their life energy, their prana, spent. Prabhupada's purport. It appears that Srimati Devahuti, the glorious mother of Lord Kapila Dev, is very compassionate for the regrettable condition of people in general, who, not knowing the goal of life, are sleeping in the darkness of illusion. It is a general feeling of the Vaishnava or devotee of the Lord that he should awaken them, because he sees clearly their ignorance and their suffering. And he sees clearly their real life, what their capacity is. And he compares their real actual capacity to be with Krishna. And the experience of bliss they would get from that, he compares that to either the pleasures they're experiencing in the material world or the sufferings. And therefore his heart melts of compassion. It is actually the compassionate heart of the Vaishnava that's melting, that that causes another, a soul, to become elevated. Even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, why did he come to this world? Who called him? Advaita Charja. Who else can save them? It is the compassion. Of course, Advaita Charja was just in the mood of a Vaishnava. Similarly, Devahuti is requesting her glorious son to illuminate the lives of the conditioned souls, so that their most regrettable conditional life may be ended. The Lord is described here in his Yoga Bhaskar, the son of the system of all yogas. Devahuti has already requested her glorious son to describe Bhakti Yoga, and the Lord described Bhakti Yoga as the ultimate yoga system. And when we think about Prabhupada's compassion, we say it all the time, we forget what it's like. You know, that at the age of 70, he left Vrindavan, such a wonderful, sweet place, and he came to the United States with not knowing anyone and having no support, no finances or anything. But when one is 24, going on 25, it is very difficult to comprehend what it's actually like at 70 to do this. But Mother Sharanagiri, how old are you nowadays? How old's the old body? Can you imagine just picking up and... Very difficult, because every joint of your body more or less aches, this hurts, digestion weak, teeth loose, eyesight weak, this, that, pain everywhere. One wants to just basically, when one is older, one wants to just relax into a comfortable chair, basically. At least that's how I already feel. Just relax you into a comfortable chair. And okay, prosecute spiritual life. Yes. But so difficult, so much real austerity to place oneself in that culture, a completely foreign culture. Such compassion. Prabhupada would say that he did it. Why? Yeah, the order of his Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj. But it wasn't just that. It was compassion. The Vaishnava will give all the credit to his spiritual master or the Lord. He won't take any credit for himself. But actually, the Lord will give only the credit to the Vaishnava. And actually, it is combined, like Guru Krishna Prasadevaya, the combined mercy of Guru and Vaishnava. There is some compassionate desire to cooperate with the desire of the Lord, to forego one's own pleasures, one's own convenience, to help others. This is wonderful. But it is very rare also, because in the material world, the definition of the material world is that everyone is selfish. False ego. I am the center. So true compassion is very, very rare. Bhakti Yoga, Prabhupada continues in the second paragraph of the purport, is sunlight, is the sun-like illumination for delivering the conditioned souls whose general condition is described here. They have no eyes to see their own interest. They do not know that the goal of life is not to increase the material necessities of existence, but because the body will not exist more than a few years. We center our lives on pleasing the body, but how long will it last? One doesn't even know. But at most 100 years or 105 years. And what is that compared to eternity? The living beings are eternal, and they have their eternal need. If one engages only in caring for the necessities of the body, not caring for the eternal necessities of life, then he is part of a civilization whose advancement puts the living entities into the darkest region of ignorance. Sleeping in that darkest region, just like goats entering the slaughterhouse, they line up. And they have one special goat who's trained, and he's a bell around his neck, and he's called the Judas goat. And he walks in the door first to the slaughterhouse, and all the other goats follow, lining right up. And human civilization is like one goat asking another goat, "Oh, is this okay?" And the other goat, and another goat says, "Yeah, no problem. Just eat some of the grass. Do this. There's no problem." And everyone's saying, "There's no problem." Every goat is saying, "There's no problem. There's no problem." And then one goat is lined up. He puts his head down. The keeper of the slaughterhouse puts his head down on the chopping block. He takes and yes! He kills him. And the goat behind thinks, "Whew, that was really close. Did you see what happened? Did you?" And everyone turns. "Did you see what happened to him? Did you see what happened to him? That was horrible. Did you see all the blood?" Everyone shakes for the... "Boy, that was really close. Oh, whew. That, everything's okay, isn't it?" "Yeah, everything's okay." But really, the only sound a goat can make is one sound. What is his sound? Which is the real answer to, "Is everything okay?" The one sound that a goat can make? "Nah. Everything is not okay." Or if it's done with sheep, "Everything's okay, isn't it?" "Bah. Everything is not okay. In the material world, nothing is okay." Sleeping. This is illusion. And a civilization that exists on that level is putting the citizens in the darkest region of ignorance. Sleeping in that darkest region, one does not get any refreshment, but rather gradually becomes fatigued. He invents many processes to adjust this fatigue condition. Like in the West, I don't think they have them in India yet, but when you have a terrible problem with your back and you've had so many operations for old people, and you're sitting in that very comfortable chair, you can't even get up from the chair. So they have, all you have to do is push a button and the chair electronically goes and stands you up. And they think, "Oh, this is really advancement. This is wonderful. Now I can stand up. I couldn't do that before." Really, I've seen. And it works too. It stands you right up. So many inventions to adjust this tired, fatigued condition of suffering. But he fails because something else works, a problem comes, and thus he remains confused. Because everything that he depends on will fail him ultimately. Everything that we depend on, even our own body, which we depend on more than anything else, will fail us, it will let us down, it will develop a dread disease. The only path for mitigating this fatigue in the struggle for existence is the path of devotional service. or the path of Krishna consciousness. How does devotional service Krishna consciousness stop the fatigue and mitigate end the suffering? How? Is it that a devotee's teeth don't fall out? I can assure you they do. Is it a devotee's back doesn't hurt? I can assure you it does. Not that I'm a devotee, but how does a devotee devotional service end this? But I can also assure you that it is not a superficial intellectual realization. This has to be realized. To know that one is not one's body and to give class on it and dehenos minyata dehe komanam and you're not your body, you're not your body, you're not your body, I'm not my body, we're not our bodies. But when we are the ones who are diseased and sick and in pain, we will understand that the realization has to be so deep. Otherwise, fear will overtake us. One's relationship with Krishna must be very thick. Otherwise, fear will overtake us. How will we depend on Him? How will we trust Him in the difficult time at the moment of death? If we don't practice in life fully acting on the principle that I only have one shelter, Krishna, at the time of death, do we think we're going to say, oh, okay, Krishna, now I should just depend. All my life I've depended on my own intelligence, my own body, my own ability. And now I'm going to have the faith and courage and experience to depend on Krishna at the time of death. It doesn't work like that. This life is the time for that. And then we'll see how weak we are, and then we'll see how much we need the association of devotees to help us, to give us strength. Yes, the path of Krishna consciousness practiced very deeply will give us relief. But it will give us relief from the pains of the bodies if one becomes very deep. So we should become deep. That's what it's meant for. Material life, suffering. Let us become deep. Deep in what? Surrender and dependence on Krishna. Surrender means dependence on Krishna as one tries to serve Him with devotion. And please, Sri Guru and Gauranga, and then whatever Krishna sends me, it's His mercy. And bad things happen, what to do? I've done so many bad things in this life and previous lives. Who can say I don't deserve it? Who can say, why is this happening to me? I'm such a nice person. Who can say that? What devotee, of course, any non-devotee will say that. But what devotee will say that? But how deep our realizations are will be tested. Each and every one of us, each and every single one of us will have to pass our own test at the end. Yes, one more. And I should hold up a mirror so I can look at myself also. So I make sure that I hear my own words. So he's going to begin his reply. Maitreya Muni said, O best among the Kurus, the great sage Kapila, moved by great compassion and pleased by the words of his glorious mother, spoke as follows. I'll read Prabhupada's short purport here. Lord Kapila was very satisfied by the request of his glorious mother because she was thinking not only in terms of her personal salvation, but in terms of all the fallen conditioned souls. The Lord is always compassionate towards the fallen souls of this material world. And therefore, He comes Himself or sends His confidential servants to deliver them. Since He's perpetually compassionate towards them, if some of His devotees also become compassionate towards them, He is very pleased with the devotee. And when we look at our own Kali Yuga piety mixed with all the impiety, we should know that unless Krishna is compassionate towards us, we don't have very much hope, unless we somehow evoke the compassion of Krishna. That is the an essential principle that, on which Prabhupada established the Krishna consciousness movement. In Bhagavad Gita, it is clearly stated that persons who are trying to elevate the condition of the fallen souls by preaching the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita, namely full surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, are very dear to him. Thus, when the Lord saw that his beloved mother was very compassionate towards the fallen souls, he was pleased. And he also became compassionate towards her. Now, here is his answer. She's asked several questions. How to prosecute devotional service that he's previously described, and about time and fruit of activities. The first thing he's going to do in text 7 through 10, how many verses is that? 4, not 3. I always have to count to my fingers while no one is looking, because I will always say 3 also. Because after all, 10 minus 7 is 3, but it's 7, 8, 9, 10. 4 texts. So this is what he's going to describe. And there's one common feature in all these things. He's going to describe devotional service executed, prosecuted in the mode of goodness. He's going to describe devotional service executed, prosecuted in the mode of passion. And devotional service executed, prosecuted in the mode of ignorance. And there is one common factor in all these. Of course, the common factor is devotional service, but there is an additional one. Listen carefully, and I'm going to read all the texts. And then I'll ask this question, what is the common factor? It only appears in the final one, which describes the mode of goodness. It appears only in the Sanskrit, actually, not in English. And that will be the difference between devotional service in the material world that will keep us in the material world and devotional service that will bring us out of the material world to Krishna's lotus feet. Text 7. Lord Kapila, the Personality of Godhead, replied, O noble lady, there are multifarious paths of devotional service in terms of the different qualities of the executor. Executor. In other words, according to my qualities, I will execute devotional service in one of three different ways. 8, text 8. Devotional service who is executed by a person who is envious, proud, violent, and angry, and who is a separatist, the word for that is what? Say it loudly, please. Binadrik. Yes? Whose vision is separate. Is considered, he's violent, he's angry, he's envious, he's proud. It's considered to be, his devotional service is considered to be in the mode of darkness. And what is the Sanskrit word for darkness here? Tamagun. We'll just read a little bit of Prabhupada's purport. One who approaches the Supreme Lord to render devotional service but who is proud of his personality. This is the last paragraph of the purport. Envious of others or vengeful. What does vengeful mean? Yes, he wants to get back. You have done this to me and I will kill you. I will do this. But yet he's a devotee. He's in the mode of anger. He thinks that he is the best devotee. Devotional service executed in this way is not pure. It is mixed and is of the lowest grade, tamasa. Sri Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur advises that a Vaishnava who is not of good character should be avoided. A Vaishnava is one who has taken the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the ultimate goal of life, But if one is not pure and still has motives to establish myself as the best Vaishnava, and because I'm not successful, then I'll criticize everyone else to prove that the reason why I'm not being successful in my Krishna consciousness, it's everyone else's fault. It's because everyone is so bad. He is not a Vaishnava of the first order of good character. One may offer his respects to such a Vaishnava because he has accepted the Supreme Lord as the ultimate goal of life, but one should not keep company with a Vaishnava who is in the mode of ignorance. But more importantly than not keeping company with a Vaishnava who is in the mode of ignorance is not to be a Vaishnava like that. Or if one has these tendencies. I see some of that in me, I'll tell you. That one has to pray very deeply to remove those tendencies so that one is elevated. Text 9. The worship of deities in the temple by a separatist with a motive for material enjoyment, fame, and opulence. Look how nicely I am worshipping my deities. Then you can understand what a great devotee I am. This is devotion in the mode of passion. The word separatist is in this verse too. And what is the Sanskrit of the word for separatist here? Pritag bhava. What does pritag mean? Do you know that word? Separate? Aloof, separate. And bhava means mood. This is his mood. The word, Prabhupada's purport. The word separatist must be understood carefully. The Sanskrit words in this connection are binadrik and pritag bhava. A separatist is one who sees his interest as separate from that of the Supreme Lord. Mixed devotees, or devotees in the mode of passion and ignorance, think that the interest of the Supreme Lord is supplying the orders of the devotee. The interest of such devotees is to draw from the Lord as much as possible for their sense gratification. This is the separatist mentality. Actually, pure devotion is explained in the previous chapter. The mind of the Supreme Lord and the mind of the devotee should be dovetailed. They should be one. That was explained in the previous chapter. But not one in the sense of one loses one's individuality, but one in the sense there is no duality between Krishna's desire and my desire. Krishna wants to be pleased in a certain way, and I wish to please him in that way. That mentality is called Sharanagati. Yes? Sharana. Surrender. Taking shelter. Return to that consciousness. So bhakti yoga, Krishna consciousness, is practiced to return in the sadhana stage, to return to that type of oneness. Oneness of desire, where our back is not turned on Krishna. Thinking ourselves independent entities meant to enjoy. What right does he have? Why is he center everything around him? I want to enjoy passion. Ignorance. Because when passion isn't satisfied, desire isn't satisfied, Kama Isha, Krodha Isha. You have done this to me, I will kill you. Revenge, anger, envy, and then passion. Oh, Prabhu. On the front, one thing, I'm offering the deity thing, something, and then inside I'm thinking, me. Still, pritag bhava. Separatist mentality. And the opposite is when my consciousness becomes dovetailed, I want to please, that is the natural consciousness of the soul. When the devotee has an interest or will different from the interest of the Supreme Lord, his mentality is that of a separatist. When the so-called devotee desires material enjoyment without reference to the interest of the Supreme Lord, or he wants to become famous or opulent by utilizing the mercy or grace of the Supreme Lord, then he's in the mode of passion. So now we can go around, this is very, very important information, we can go around and say, this one's in the mode of passion, 3% passion, or rather 30% passion, 60% ignorance. This one over here, 22%. Look, what I'm watching you. I've written a computer program that can tell exactly how you're, what kind of a separatist you are, passion, ignorance, and exactly what mixture. Yes, I've analyzed each and every person, and I know I'm not a foolish person. This information is mostly for us not to find the faults of others, but to examine our own wretched consciousness and see where the impurities are so we can remove them very carefully and become humble. 10. When a devotee, now notice there's one word that really doesn't appear in the, that doesn't appear in the purport in Prabhupada's translation, but it's there and it's very important. And the word is again pritak bhava, separatist. So that what's going to be described, the devotee in text 10 that's going to describe is in the mode of goodness, but he's also a separatist. 10. When a devotee worships the Supreme Personality of Godhead and offers the results of his activities in order to free himself from the inebrieties of fruitive activities, his devotion is in the mode of goodness. So what is the common element in all those who perform devotional service in passion, goodness and ignorance? What is it? It's obvious. And what does that mean? What does it mean that he's a separate? What does it mean actually? Huh? Is personal, self-centered, selfish desires. Which of the elements that Kapila Muni described in chapter 26 as the elements in the Mahatattva or in Pradhan, unmanifest, which of the elements is there of the infection of? False ego. He still has a hankar, a false sense of identity, a false self-interest. While the real self-interest of the Lord, of the devotee, is that oneness, to give himself fully, sharanagati, to give himself fully to Krishna's service, and that is called surrender. So that's what's lacking, and that's where pure devotional service begins. When the soul offers himself to Krishna, sharanagati, surrender. Maam ekam saranam braja. For the one in the mode of goodness, his motive is quite pure. I'm performing so many activities, let me give the fruit to Krishna to free me from the improper, troublesome karmic results of that activities. But one who is surrendered to Krishna, he performs the activity for Krishna's pleasure, and who does he rely on to free him from the results of his activities? Krishna. Aham tam sarva papebhyo moksha shami ma sucha. Do not fear, ma sucha, do not fear. Do not hesitate. You are in my hands. Depend on me. And for a conditioned soul, that is extremely frightening. To depend on another, because the example of in the slaughterhouse, the goat. Who is feeding the goat and making him grow strong? Who? the man who's going to kill him. So you eat, you take food, I'm giving you food. And then when you're fat, I will kill you. Selfishness, everyone in the material, so everyone develops such a distrust in the material world of others. But that distrust should, and Prabhupada said on the other hand that the center of the Krishna consciousness movement was not distrust, but love and trust. But when we deal with the devotees, we have to deal with an open-hearted way, even though they're conditioned. But how? How can we deal with each other in a loving and trusting way, knowing that I have so many faults? Is that? I'll answer that question. That trust is really, ultimately, it's in Krishna. That nothing can happen to me bad unless Krishna, as the sanctioner, Anumatta, as the sanctioner, unless he agrees to it, nothing can happen to me. Even if someone who I really trusted and gave my heart to, if this he has some problem and therefore I feel I can never trust anyone again. But ultimately we have to say that Krishna has sanctioned it. Otherwise it could not happen. And there is something in me that has deserved it. Then I will get angry at Krishna. I can't trust him anymore. But where does that leave us? Where does that leave us? Leaves us in the material world as a conditioned soul. Very difficult. It sounds easy, but it is very difficult. But at the time of death, unless we have fully practiced surrender, taking shelter of Krishna, no matter what happens, as Parikshit Maharaj. Did he get angry at Krishna? Krishna, you created this Vanashrama system, this pure Brahmin boy for no reason cursed me. How can I trust you from now on? No, he said, anyway, what can be done? Hare Krishna, something like Chitraketu, when he was cursed by Parvati, of all people, Parvati, the universal mother, so affectionate to all living entities, cursed him so heavily, over nothing practically. And did he get angry at her? Did he get, Krishna, why do you saying, I have to take my birth as a demon? What to do? What can be done? There must be Krishna's mercy in this. And indeed, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains what Krishna's mercy was in it. He wanted to bring him back, Chitraketu, back quickly to the spiritual world. Because there he was, flying around as a Vidyadhara. But very difficult, the surrender. And it is not that once one surrenders, it's finished. No. Krishna consciousness is an ever-deepening surrender only. An ever-deepening surrender, faith, trust, and surrender. The final verse of Mahaprabhu's Jikastak prayers is a Shleshava Padaratam Panastumam Madarshanam Mamat Limpatlambato, you're this, you're that. But anyway, whatever, you are still Matprananat. If that's not surrender, I don't know what is. That is surrender based on love. The whole Gopi Gita. Surrender. Whatever. You've left us in the middle of the night. There are tigers, there are lions, we are just young girls. But we're worried that when you're wandering around, that your feet are going to be pricked by the thorns and rocks and ankur, the sprout. Our only concern is you. You do. And Kaviraj Goswami explains in the final chapter of Chaitanya Charitamrita, when he describes the Shikasta, he describes that Srimati Radharani's mood is if him having so many girlfriends is giving pleasure to him, I will facilitate that. One drop of pleasure. Surrender. So of course, perhaps we're not on that stage, but we should know what's the difference between mixed devotion and pure devotion. It is absence of false ego and on surrender and giving oneself, putting oneself as Krishna's. And we're here to learn that. Here meaning here in this world. It is a field, a wonderful activities. A wonderful field of activities for learning surrender. Why? Because it is such a miserable place, and whatever you want to happen won't happen, or if it happens, it will happen only for a short period of time. Padam padam yad vipadam the tesham. It is a place, this place is built a perfect field for us to learn the art of Sharanagati, of surrender. It is not meant for us to manipulate so things are comfortable, convenient, safe and secure for us. It is meant for us to learn surrender. So that if at the time of death, we can... You want to take me now? Okay. Where would you like to take me? You'd like to take me from one birth in the material world? Okay. What birth should I take next? Okay, you decide. Very difficult, very easy for me to sit up here and preach. But so difficult to actually apply in life. So difficult for a conditioned soul. It needs a real development of taste, of love, and a lot of hearing. A lot of hearing and a lot of practical application of the hearing. And a lot of humility, seeing how every day, how many times we fail at this. How many times I'll become angry when things don't happen the way I want. How many times I become attached, I want some fruit of result. How many times I'm doing it and hoping that something I've done, I don't get a reaction for it. So when there's so many varieties, it's not just goodness, passion, ignorance. It's subtle mixtures. 81, Prabhupada explains. And just like different shadings of colors going from one to the other. Don't do that. Pretty good, huh? 11:12. Text 11:12. Now here in 12 and 13... and 14. In 12 and 13, there'll be descriptions of first the positive description of what pure devotional service is, and then in 13, in negative, what it isn't. What the devotee does act like, 13, what he doesn't act like, what he doesn't want, and 14, it will be, what is the result of this kind of pure devotional service? 13, or rather 12. The manifestation of unadulterated devotional service, this is pure devotional service, fully surrendered, is exhibited when one's mind is at once attracted to hearing the transcendental name and qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is residing in one's heart. In other words, one loves Krishna. Just as the water of the Ganges flows naturally towards the ocean, such devotional ecstasy, uninterrupted by any material condition. The material conditions are there, but the devotee is aloof from it. Nothing in the material world can stop or interrupt Tivrena Bhakti Yogena. It flows, his consciousness, his devotional ecstasy uninterruptedly flows towards the Supreme Lord. No desire, nothing I want, I just want to please you. This is Bhagavad Dharma. No false ego, nothing created by the Mahatattva. And what doesn't he want? So these, the ones in the modes, the devotees in the modes, they had something in passion or goodness or ignorance to attain. But this one doesn't even, this transcendental devotee doesn't even desire anything spiritual. 13, and these verses are very famous. A pure devotee does not accept any kind of liberation. He doesn't even want that. Mama janmi janmani shrude bhavatad bhakti ahaitiki twai. Same word, ahaitiki. Causeless, uninterrupted. Ahaitiki avyavahitas yabhakti purushottame. A pure devotee does not accept any kind of liberation. Salokya sharshi samipya sarupya or ekatva. What is the other word for ekatva? Yes, both those. Sayuja, Kaivalya. Even though they are offered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You want, oh Lord, you have, oh my devotee, you've been suffering so much in the material world to serve me. I will give you, you can come to my planet, you can have my opulences, you can have a form just like mine. No. I am not Banya. I'm not doing business with you. I just want to serve you. You place me where you like. We'll read the first paragraph of Prabhupada's purport and then the final verse. Lord Chaitanya teaches us how to execute pure devotional service out of spontaneous love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the Shikshastaka, he prays to the Lord, O Lord, I do not wish to gain from you any wealth, nor do I wish to have a beautiful wife, nor do I wish to have many followers. All I want from you is that in life after life I remain a pure devotee at your lotus feet. What verse? Haituki Tway, same word. There's a similarity between the prayers of Lord Chaitanya and the statements of Srimad Bhagavatam. Lord Chaitanya prays in life after life, indicating that a devotee does not even desire the cessation of birth and death. The yogis and empiric philosophers desire cessation of the process of birth and death. But a devotee is satisfied to remain even in this material world and execute devotional service. If, conditional case, if it is pleasing to Krishna, if that's what you want, if that is what you want, if it's what you want, then I'm happy with it, because it is your, if it is pleasing you. It's wonderful. This is the price. And then the final text we'll read today, the result of such pure devotional service, Bhakti Yoga. By attaining the highest platform of devotional service, Kapila Muni says, as I have explained, one can overcome the influence of the three modes of material nature and be situated in the transcendental stage, as is the Lord. The impersonalists and Mayavadi Sanskritists, they will analyze those verses. Yes, you perform devotional service of the Lord, and then by such powerful devotional service, you become one with Him. But just said that this is clearly not the desire. All the liberations are not desired by Him. That sort of purposeful devotional service is not actually pure devotional service, obviously. There's a motive. I want something. See how wonderful, how refined. And therefore, as we mentioned yesterday, that Narottama Das Thakur was saying that this pure love is like gold refined in 100 flames. Again and again, every slight bit of impurity removed. And don't think that flames are not hot. Without heat, tapasya, the purity won't occur. We don't have to go looking for difficult austerities to perform, but it's just natural if one tries to prosecute seriously, execute devotional service. Austerities are so many. Okay, thank you very much. And in the next texts that if Krishna allows we shall read tomorrow, Kapila Muni will explain how to prosecute that devotional service. He's given standards of purity. Simple standards, simple processes he'll give, but very important. First is get the consciousness to know what pure devotional service is. Thank you. Any questions or comments? In text 10, when a devotee worships the Supreme Personality of Godhead and offers the results of his activities in order to free himself from the inebrieties, that's more of fruit of activities. His devotion is in the mode of goodness. In that one? So are we doing that? No. No, I'm not. I've never said that. Exactly. But goodness this is in the 17th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna explains that we should act primarily in the mode of goodness and offer everything. It's a simple explanation of what devotional service is. But devotional service isn't really acting in the mode of goodness. It's offering everything to Krishna. Not, I'm going to work in the mode of goodness and then offer the fruit to Krishna. It's offering the work to Krishna, it's offering the result to Krishna, both. And this is one of the reasons, because our devotional service, because, see, we're stuck, sort of, at least, speak for myself, that here I'm not pure, but yet, and I'm covered, and there's so much impurity, everything I do is impure, so how could something impure be offered to the pure? So we need the via media of spiritual master to do that. That he's accepting the service and offering it on. That's the simplest way to understand that basic principle. That he's offering it through the disciplic succession. Our basic service is to him, and he's offering it to through his spiritual master. Upward. And in that, one associates with Krishna directly. Good question. I don't know. Did I answer your question? So then the question is, if I'm impure, if my consciousness isn't perfect, if it's contaminated by the modes of material nature, am I actually offering devotional service? So Prabhupada always says yes. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says no. Baladev says yes. Because just what Baladev says, and Prabhupada follows him, saying that because it leads to pure devotional service, it leads to devotional service, meaning pure devotional service, it also can be understood as devotional service. If someone asks you, is he performing pure devotional service or devotional service, you say yes. If someone asks you, if you are, then you say, I know my heart. All I can do is aspire for this. I'm not a Vaishnava, a devotee, because I know my heart. So contaminated. But we shouldn't. So if you want to consider pure devotional service, really begins on the transcendental platform. That is the Vaishnava platform. So we can say that we're aspiring to be devotees. Devotional service is actually already transcendental. We're aspiring to be devotees. Saveshu bhuteshu mad bhakti madhati param. Without falling, mam chayo vivacharena bhakti yogena sevade sagunan samachikaita. So, we also need so much mercy. that Krishna, we have, and that's a good reason not to be a fault finder, is because everyone has faults, contaminations of the modes of material nature. So we wish Krishna to overlook the faults in our service and the self-interestedness and just see the whatever sincerity that may be there. We wish Krishna to view us in that kind way, so we should also view others. Motive goodness is... You're so humble, you must be a pure devotee. 13? Text 13, yes. Bina mat sevanam jana. Okay. Without, a person without my service cannot get. So you're saying that's what the verse could be translated as. But how about the nagrananti? He does not accept this without... But that's true. That's true. You mean they do not accept liberation or they cannot attain liberation? But I also know that may be another way to translate this verse. I am not a Sanskritist. And if I'm not careful, I'm going to take my next breath. So I am. But that may be a translation of it. But I also know that Srila Rupa Goswami uses this text in specifically in Bhakti Samhita Sindhu, Nectar of Devotion, to just simply make the point that Prabhupada is making through it, that my devotee is so elevated that even if he's offered these things, he won't accept it. Or another way, and I've seen it translated another way too, that if it interferes, if it's not conducive for his devotional service, he won't accept it. Okay. If it depends on what your service is, and that depends on who you are, perhaps. Your question was, how is it possible for a soul to get this without it being what is good for him? Yes? Yeah, my only understanding of this, or my understanding of this, is that if Krishna makes him take it, in other words, I guess when I was first chanting, the devotee, I started telling this story perhaps yesterday or a few days before, but I never got around to finishing it. That the devotee who first devotee I associated with the word chanting, he used to say that if Krishna comes to you, if you've practiced your devotional service so purely, and Krishna comes to you and says, you've been serving me so much. He comes to you and used to say, he reveals himself. I'm like this. He used to go like that for some reason with his hands. And he says, what do you want from me? You've served me so sincerely, I will give you whatever you want. What do you want from me? I will give you liberation. I will give you this. I will give you that. What do you want? I will give it to you. And Rupa used to say, it was sort of almost like a warning or instructing us of something that may one day happen in 100,000 births from now. He said, don't ask him for anything. Say, I only want to serve you. Let him take care of that, in other words. So this isn't the desire of a devotee. He's willing, as Prabhupada's purport is explaining, he's willing to stay in the material world to facilitate Krishna's pleasure if that's what's pleasing to him. If Krishna wants to bring him to Goloka and give him the same form as Uddhava had, he'll accept it. But that's not his desire. And if one has desires like that, he can't go to Vrindavan. He can't enter Vrindavan. There's such an... The nature of the love of the residents of Vrindavan is purified to a 100th degree. What can one say about it? It only has one concern, and that is the pleasure of Krishna. I'm still not sure if I've actually answered your question. Not, more or less. So Prabhupada translated on that highest level, although as in every Sanskrit verse, you can break it, put it together, break it together. But if one happens to end up in Goloka Vrindavan, in Vaikuntha, you make a mistake, and Krishna says, "Do you want a form like mine?" He says, "Okay, if that's what you want," and they end up there. If it's not your actual nature, you won't be satisfied there, and you won't stay there. Krishna will not force. And of course, Brihad Bhagavatamrita explains this point, if somewhat indirectly. It's already late, so anyone, we can continue a bit because there were some questions. But if anyone wants to leave, certainly they are, feel free. So yeah, Adi. Purification. Sometimes it's Krishna will satisfy. It depends how Krishna deals with us, but ultimately it's purification. Krishna is the spark. Krishna will see the good, and maybe he'll give us our material desire, and that won't satisfy us, and then we'll learn, like he did with Dhruva Maharaj. He gave him his material desire. But ultimately, a devotee is in Krishna's hands. So Krishna will take charge of fulfilling these desires. And there's that wonderful section of Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is more or less a purport on that Harishya Tadanasanai verse, where Krishna says, "Why this devotee, my devotee wants this and this and that. Why should I give it to him? I'll just take everything away from him and make him fully dependent on me. Everyone will reject him and make him fully dependent on me." Other questions? Yes. Where does it say? Of course, because Krishna's lotus feet is... But see, there's no contradiction, actually. Because if a devotee is in that mood, he's with Krishna wherever he is. Because if we don't think like that, then we'll want to stay here in the material world, but not for preaching purposes, but you know, to get a nice Rolex watch and and who knows what. Yes, we shouldn't desire to be. We should desire to go there. But despite that desire, that intense desire to serve Krishna, we're willing to let Krishna place us where he likes. So that's mama janmani janmani. Yeah, it's a little late for comments, but let me just see if there's any questions first. Were there any questions here? But this is specifically doing something. Yeah, it's not for Krishna. It's not the highest in the sense of I'm still the center. So as that's the point. That's what makes one a separatist. Specifically that I am still the center. But if one sees very clearly the impurities in his own heart and feels that this is getting in the way of my service to Krishna, then it's not like this. It's who's in the center, whether there is false ego or not. That's what makes one with Pritagbhava or Bina. If I'm thinking, humbly that look what I know what's in my heart, and only if I could serve properly I'd be able to please Krishna, that's different. That's not like this. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Kapila Muni ki jai, Devoti Ma ki jai, Kaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.